Georgia native Jimmy Carter was the 39th president of the United States. Of course, he served from 1977 to 1981. Halfway through his presidency, he gave his crisis of confidence speech.
I promise to you a president who is not isolated from the people, who feels your pain and who shares your dreams, and who draws his strength and his wisdom from you.
Stuart Eisenstadt was Carter's chief domestic policy advisor, and he has a new book out about the Carter administration. It's called President Carter, The White House Years. He joins us on the line from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Stuart.
Adam, good morning. Thank you.
President Carter famously brought a lot of people in his administration with him from Georgia. Were you one of those?
Yes, I had been his policy director when he ran for governor. I was his policy director when he ran for president. And I was his White House domestic policy advisor for 4 years in the White House, but also involved in a number of foreign policy matters as well.
Now, a lot of your colleagues from those years have written books about Carter. Historians have written innumerable books. The Carter administration is half a century old at this point. What did you feel that you had that was new to contribute?
Well, thank you, Adam. First, there is not a comprehensive biography of the Carter administration at all. And I felt that I needed to do that. Second, I had a unique view. I took over 5,000 pages of contemporaneous notes of every meeting and phone call, what all the key actors were doing. I've interviewed over 350 people, positive and negative, to write a comprehensive review. I've looked at every conceivable declassified documents. And the basic reason was I felt that the problems he had, which of course resulted in a landslide loss in 1980, and which I do not whitewash, totally have obscured a remarkable and accomplished presidency. Indeed, I would assert, and I believe my book will verify, that he was the most accomplished one-term president that we've had in modern times, and indeed accomplished more than almost any other two-term president. Congress passed, for example, 70% of his legislative proposals, only slightly less than the legislative master, Lyndon Johnson. So I wanted to do something special about the president. His political idol was Harry Truman. He placed Truman's favorite slogan on his desk, "The buck stops here," and both left as widely unpopular presidents. Truman is now recognized more for his achievements than his faults, Adam, and I hope my book will contribute to a similar reassessment of Jimmy Carter as president, not just as our most admired former president.
What would you say is his greatest single achievement from his presidency?
Well, there are so many that it's hard to pick one, but let me try to pick one in the domestic area and one in the foreign policy area, but I hope I'll have a chance during this segment to go into more detail. I think domestically his most important accomplishment was providing the foundation for the energy security we enjoy today. He did that by decontrolling, and this is over three bills in 4 years, decontrolling the price of natural gas and crude oil to encourage their maximum production. He put conservation at the center of our agenda for the country, and he inaugurated the new era of clean energy with solar and wind power by tax credits and other incentives and even putting a solar panel on the White House. On foreign policy, it's a close call between the Camp David Accords, which are historic, led to the Egypt-Israel Treaty, the first between Israel and its Arab enemies. That's lasted, Adam, for now 40 years without any infraction at all. Relations now between Israel and Egypt against Iran and terrorism are very deep. But human rights, putting human rights as a central part of his foreign policy, applying it to Latin American dictators, cutting off their arms, reaching out to the dissident movement, and together with the Panama Canal Treaty, creating a new era in relations, and also applying it, Adam, to the Soviet Union, reaching out to democratic dissidents, and to the Soviet jury movement, saving Sharansky's life during the trial, the head of the Soviet Jewish movement. These are just a few of the highlights. So I would say energy, Camp David, and human rights. But again, there is so much more to discuss.
We're talking about President Jimmy Carter's legacy with Stuart Eisenstadt. He's the author of a new book, President Carter, The White House Years. Stuart Eisenstadt is one of the many people that President Carter brought to the White House with him from his gubernatorial administration in Georgia. We were talking about the greatest hits. Let's talk about some of the greatest misses. I suppose that a lot of people regard the Iranian revolution and ensuing American hostage crisis to be one of the things that kept President Carter from winning a second term. You have a new perspective in your book about the aborted rescue mission to free those 50-some American hostages that were being held at the embassy by the Iranian revolutionaries.
Yes, and as I said, Adam, the book is candid and it's balanced. I believe the lethal combination of Ted Kennedy's divisive challenge to his Democratic renomination and Iran, in two respects, helped lead to the overwhelming defeat. And I say two respects because the Iranian Revolution produced two things. One, huge crude oil shortages, which led inflation to go into the stratosphere, into double digits. It happened with Nixon and it happened with us. And, of course, the Iranian hostage crisis and the rescue mission. Now, you asked specifically about the rescue mission. Mm-hmm. The rescue mission, I think, had a very, very slight chance of succeeding to begin with. It was exceedingly complicated. It required a number of actions in the Iranian desert and going into Tehran, which were themselves very difficult. But the basic reason was not the simplistic notion, well, if we just had another helicopter, backup helicopter. The president actually added another helicopter to that, which the military required. Rather, it was, interestingly, the lack of practice. And I give, having grown up in Atlanta and in Georgia, sort of an example that when somebody like Wally Butts, Georgia, or Bear Bryant, the coach of Alabama, they practiced with all the elements of their team always together. There was no practice between all the military services involved here, Marines, Air Force, Army, Navy. They had never worked together on a mission like this. We created a joint command later because of this. So there was no practice together. They were afraid that if they practiced together in, say, the California desert, the press would find out about it. And it was the absence of coordination of the four military services which led to the catastrophe, plus the fact that the Navy was so uncooperative that they did not want to put a carrier close by. And therefore, the helicopters, which were not the right attack helicopters, had to leave from a destination much further away in the Indian Ocean, and by the time they got to Desert One, had themselves had problems. If they had been in the Persian Gulf and closer, it would have had a greater chance of success. But really, at bottom, Adam, it was the lack of coordinated practice between the military services who had not previously coordinated on any kind of an activity and intervention like this.
You mentioned there that you grew up in Atlanta, Stuart. President Carter, of course, famously the peanut farmer from South Georgia. If you look at it, we've not had a lot of modern presidents from the South, especially if you take out Texas, which a lot of people would say you should. Maybe Bill Clinton's presidency sort of normalized Southernness in the White House in the modern era. But take us back to the time when you and your colleagues got to the White House. Was there a culture shock?
Yes. I mean, Jimmy Carter, remember, was the first Deep South president elected since Reconstruction. I mean, Lyndon Johnson, and I served in his White House, on his White House staff, came from Texas. So Jimmy Carter was really the first Deep South candidate. He won all the southern states except Virginia. And he did things that really were not typical of southern candidates. For example, he appointed more women and African Americans to judgeships and senior administration posts than all the 38 presidents preceding him put together. He was a great consumer champion. He transformed our overregulated transportation system by deregulating trucks and railroads and bringing air travel to the middle class. There wouldn't be, I think, Adam, a Southwest and a JetBlue or UPS and FedEx air cargo as we know them today. Without that, he started the telecommunications revolution with deregulation and cable. He was also, and again, you wouldn't expect this necessarily from a Southern president, he was the greatest environmental president we've ever had since Theodore Roosevelt. He doubled the size of the national park system with Alaska lands. He brought ethics and good government. In fact, the reason in many ways we won the election in 76 was a combination of sort of Southern pride, which is why we swept so many Southern states, but it was also the post-Watergate era. He promised and delivered on ethics reforms. The 1978 Ethics Act, for example, required disclosures of assets going in and out, gift limits, limiting the so-called revolving door going out, created inspectors general to root out fraud and waste and abuse in every agency. And there's not a week that goes by, Adam, that you don't hear of an inspector general's report. He created the independent counsel to investigate wrongdoing by senior officials. And if that sounds current, it should. Sure. Merit selection of judges and so forth. And he created the modern vice presidency with Mondale. He took a position that was held in disrepute and brought him into the West Wing right near the Oval Office. So all of these things were really crucial and not recognized. And even his defense buildup to match the Soviet buildup, his normalization of relations with China, these were things that have simply gotten ignored because of the twin problems of inflation.
It goes on and on, Stuart, and unfortunately we have to leave it there. But fortunately, you've written a book called President Carter, The White House Years, by Stuart Eisenstadt, a former Carter administration official himself who came from Atlanta. He served as President Carter's chief domestic policy advisor. Thank you so much, Stuart.
Adam, thank you for having me.